This week on F8, The Photographer's Perspective, I interview urban explorer Alana St. Laurent. I've been fortunate to work alongside some of the world's most inspiring photographers. I've watched how they've helped others at our conferences and transform the way they see through the lens. Welcome, I'm your host, Chris Smith, founder of Out of Chicago. This is F8, The Photographer's Perspective, the show where we have candid conversations and go in-depth with the pros to get to know them better. Join us each week as we discuss photography, get to know their personal perspectives, and introduce you to new places and experiences, helping you get the most out of your creative passion. All right, welcome to The Photographer's Perspective. Today, I'm joined by Detroit and Chicago architecture, cityscape, interior, all sorts of things photographer, Alana St. Laurent. Welcome to the show, Alana.
Thank you, Chris, for having me. This is great.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about a lot of the things you photograph. And like I said, we changed the name of the podcast to get your perspective on photography. Everyone's kind of got their own little thing. So we're really excited to dive into that. And you're going to be one of the instructors at the Out of Chicago conference at the end of the month. So we're really excited about that as well.
I'm very excited. This is the first year, I think, that I was actually able to do it because of my art fairs that I do over the summer. There are certain weekends that I have open, and it just happened to be this year that I had an opening, and it was awesome. And I was very excited to be invited to come.
Yeah, and we're really lucky to have you. So we're going to talk about art fairs. We're going to talk about drone photography, and we're going to talk about the cityscapes and architecture and all the stuff that you photograph. So tell us just a little bit about your favorite things to photograph. I kind of said it, but you're in Detroit, but you photograph Chicago quite a bit as well. So tell us just a little bit about your favorite things.
Sure. Well, I love Chicago, and I love that I'm so close to Chicago. And I have been there, I don't know how many times I've been there over the years, but I always make a point to come to the Open House Chicago every year in October. And I usually come a few other times during the year to photograph the cityscapes. And it's hard to limit it to favorites, I know, but we have to, right? One of my favorite places is actually going to be one of the photo walks that I will be doing during the Out of Chicago conference. I like to call them the Cobbs, but it's officially called Marina City Apartment Building, which anyone who has walked around and photographed that part of the city knows those two buildings that look like corn cobs.
Exactly.
So, I love photographing them. I really do. I have this little love affair with them. So I love to take pictures of those. So my photo walk is going to be pretty much around that area, walking down to Wolf Point. So I love that part of the city. You've got the river. You've got so much great architecture. You've got the boats going down the river. You've got the L crossing the river. So there's a lot of different vantage points that you can capture the city just between those two points. So that's what I'm going to be focusing on and pointing out to people, great shots and vantage points they can get in that area.
No, that sounds great. Just in general, that's kind of your thing is doing a lot of cityscapes,
yes.
Doing architecture as well too, right?
Yes.
And we'll also talk about, you do a lot of abandoned buildings. So we'll talk a little bit about that too. Yeah?
Yeah.
Or no, she's like, I don't know if I want to talk about that.
I've been, I don't even know the number of buildings I've been in, but I would say it's probably somewhere between 500 and 1,000. Because I have traveled all over the Eastern U.S., visiting so many locations to capture all types of abandoned buildings. And Detroit is where it started. Actually, the Michigan train station was my very first abandoned building that I photographed in 2008. And I was so enamored with the beauty of that building and just the feel of being in this building that has been left the elements, and it's there's a haunted feel to these locations, but a peaceful at the same time. It's sort of a strange thing to think about, I guess, them being peaceful, but they're so quiet, places that used to have a lot of activity and a lot of people coming through them that are now just sitting quiet. So I don't do as much of the abandonment as I used to, just because, well, in Detroit, we've been having this renaissance in Detroit the last 5 years. So a lot of the buildings I used to photograph are either being renovated, they're being torn down, or they've been shuttered. So now you can't even get access to them anymore. So I have not been doing as much in the city, or even like doing some, you know, like I said, the trips that I've been taking. So my focus is sort of changed a little bit, where I'm now with the drones. I've been wanting to focus more on that, and doing that type of photography and really being able to learn more about it. There's obviously a learning curve to drones. You can't just fly it and all of a sudden know what you're doing. I've watched tons of hours of videos and reading books, and then you just have to do it. You have to do a lot of practicing to get familiar and comfortable with the controls and really feeling confident that you know what you're doing when you're flying. A lot of people lose their drones. They fly off. Well, these are things that can happen to even an experienced drone pilot. But you know, these are things that you need to be aware of and know how to handle when they happen. So I know we're kind of like flying through a lot of different subjects.
Yeah. So we're going
to. I didn't mean to delve into the drone as quickly, but just to circle back around to Chicago, just because you mentioned a couple other places that I love to shoot. I love to shoot like the 18th Street Bridge and Chinatown, I think is a really fun area. And any place I can get high up in the city to see the cityscape. I know that we will be going to it was John Hancock, but I don't remember what's the official name of it.
It's like 360. Well, no, it really is the Hancock Tower.
Okay, it is. Okay.
We're going to the observatory called like 360 Chicago, whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I have not been there in like 4 years, and I'm very excited to be able to see it at the time of day that we'll be going. And then of course, just walking the streets. I like photographing underneath like the L tracks, or going up and capturing the L in certain vantage points around the city. I have sort of this, a love affair with like public transportation. In Detroit, it's the people mover and the Q line. In Chicago, it's the L. It could be a bus. It could be, you know, any sort of movement that you can get where you can sort of see the action of the city and kind of get a feel of the vibrance of the action that's happening in the city.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, is that it's not just a static subject, that even if it's just the tracks, it gives you that sense of movement through the city. Even if the train isn't on it, I think you still get it somewhat.
Yes, and even though I don't shoot a lot of people photography, but I do like to capture, people in motion, you know, which I think just gives a sense of the energy in the city and, you know, people going about their day. And so I really like to capture that as well as the architecture, but the architecture always comes first, of course, in my book. So I think that covers Chicago. In Detroit, I know you had asked me about some favorite places.
Yeah. Like just, for someone coming into Detroit and they hear so much about it, and that's, I'm from Detroit area originally. So, so I'm back there quite a bit too. For someone that's coming in, what are just a couple of places, if you got friends coming in, that you might point them to and say, yeah, these are really cool. You got to see it. And just try and show off your city.
Yeah. Oh gosh. And there is so much to see. I would say the Guardian Building and the Fisher Building would probably be my two top buildings, where they're publicly accessible. The public can go in and enjoy the buildings. And the Guardian Building is our Art Deco beauty that we have. The Fisher Building, which I always love this story, to hear the Fisher brothers, when they built this building, they said, spare no expense. And that really shows when you go in the building and you look at it, it's a beautiful marvel that we have. So we were very fortunate to have had wealthy businessmen in our it wasn't just automotive, a lot of it was, but you know, there was lumber and at one point too, where they put the money into the city and they wanted to leave this legacy. So I would say those would be my two favorite.
So those are like all about the interiors, right? For the most part, you're talking
yes.
about?
Yes,
so,
the exteriors could also be, you know, the Guardian and Fisher both have beautiful exterior architecture as well. I would say like the Wayne County Courthouse when it comes to exteriors is probably one of my favorite. They have this beautiful statuary on the front of the building, and the building is currently vacant. It's not abandoned, it's vacant, but I can just imagine that at some point in the future it will be in use, because yeah, everything else in Detroit is basically back in use again or on the way to being back in use.
Wasn't it like Town Hall in one of the Batman movies or something too?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's such a cool building, yeah.
I would say that one, and then, well, the Renaissance Center, I think, is one that a lot of people just recognize as being part of the landscape of the cityscape.
It's iconic for Detroit, right?
It is definitely iconic.
Whether you like it or not, yeah.
Whether you like it or not, it is part of it's part of our skyline. You just can't get away from it. It's there. Mm-hmm. And of course, now Dan Gilbert is currently building what will be the largest, tallest building in Detroit, right on the site of where the old Hudson's building used to stand. So that it will be coming in the future. There's a hotel, which the building used to be the Metropolitan Building originally. It was a jewelry, a place where people go to get jewelry. So it was filled with jewelers. And now it has been renovated, and now it's called the Elements Hotel. And I've been able to go in and get some before and after pictures. And they just opened the very first bar at the top of the building. So now you can go up there, get a drink, and see the skyline, called the Monarch Club. So I would say if you're going to Detroit, go get a drink up there, you know, be able to take in the skyline of the city. And really,
now if they're going to, I'm sorry, can you finish your thought?
No, I was just going to say, I was just up there, actually I'm going back, but I was just up there a couple weeks ago taking some interior shots. I have befores and afters when I was up there. So, well, I already have some published, but I have a lot of befores, and there's a couple more afters I need to get.
Well, you've got more time for afters, no more time for befores.
No more befores left. No, not for that building. That ship has sailed. I would say I love walking down Griswold. There is the Penobscot Building. The exterior of that is sort of has like even like a Native American feel to its architectural details. That's a favorite exterior of mine. But anywhere walking along Griswold, you've got the Guardian, you've got what used to be the Dime Building, which is now the Ford House. You've got the Penobscot Building. You've got Capitol Park, which has the David Stott, and which is now an apartment building, which used to be abandoned. And then you've got the Farwell Building, which I have some beautiful atrium shots of when it was abandoned. And now that's going to be apartment buildings. And then you've got you pass the Coney Islands.
What are the Coney Islands? People don't know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You've got the American Coney Island and Lafayette Coney Island, and they were right next to each other.
But
and
what are they? People think it's like an amusement park or something in New York City.
Coney
it's
Island.
Not, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess we call them Coney Island. So they're hot dogs with Coney sauce and onion and mustard or whatever toppings I guess one likes to put on them. And I think there are families that have longstanding feuds of which one is better, the Ben or Coney dog.
That's right. And there's also the feud, which I'm not going to get into, is whether the Detroit Coney dog is better than the Chicago hot dog, but we were never going to go there. Uh-huh.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what's really cool about what you're talking about, though, is all these locations that you've mentioned are all very close to each other, downtown Detroit. Am I wrong? Like they're pretty much all walkable, like for one evening. I mean, you wouldn't be able to photograph every single one of them, but they're all close to each other.
I would say if someone was only going to be in Detroit for maybe a day or so, I would say Woodward Avenue, Griswold Avenue would be two places that I would either drive down or walk down. You've got the Campus Martius along Woodward Avenue. You've got the Fox Theater, you've got the Entertainment District with the new Little Caesars Arena, you've got Comerica Park, you've got the Ford Field, and then like Campus Martius, where they have, that's where our Christmas tree goes at Christmas, but in the summertime they convert it into They have like a little like beachy area and lots of tables where people can hang out and enjoy the beautiful sunny weather that we get very limited amounts of in the summer. We've had such a rainy spring this year. And then walking down towards the river along Woodward, you've got some beautiful architectural buildings. You've got the One Detroit, you've got the One Woodward, and then you've got Hart Plaza at the end with transcending sculpture. So there's a lot to see. There really is. And then
for those, the fist, right?
I was just going to mention the fist, I beat you to it. I don't like the fist.
I just want to say that I beat you to the punch on that one. All right. So Alana, tell us what the Detroit fist is.
What it is? An abomination? No. It just sits there, right? In the middle of Woodward or Jefferson Avenue. I don't know. It's a sculpture, right?
Yeah. And like you said, like free hanging fist.
I just heard a story the other day. Someone had told me that even the city council didn't even like it. And they asked the sculptor to actually redo it. Like redo whatever he was doing. And he's like, ha ha ha. And just, you know, took his check to the bank and cashed it. So, you know, I think that now that's what we've got. But what are you going to do? It's there. It doesn't go anywhere. So
it's also iconic. So
it is. Yeah. It is an iconic part of Detroit for sure. You know, it's allowing us to remember Joe Louis and honor him. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, especially now that there's no Joe Louis Arena, right?
We've got the new Little Caesars Arena, which is now on Woodward. The Joe Louis was down along the waterfront, which now will be demolished. And I think they're just going to put up hotel in its place for a Cobo, which sits right next to it. The Cobo Center is where they have all the, you know, the auto show and a lot of big conventions are there. So it makes sense they would put a hotel right next to it.
Yeah. How about safety downtown Detroit? Oh. Do you give people tips for, you know, what they should do? They're wandering around a city they're not used to and they have expensive camera gear.
Well, okay. So just to touch on the safety thing in general, I think that Detroit is safer than it used to be, for sure. The downtown area. I think that with Dan Gilbert bringing in his security force, he's got cameras all over the downtown corridor. He's got a security who is monitoring it 24/7. So I think that has allowed crime to greatly dissipate. And I feel much safer walking around downtown than I might have, you know, 10 years ago. So I think people are starting to see that and feel that as they come back to the city. Now with photographers and their expensive camera equipment. So this is sort of a separate point because I don't want people to feel so safe that they don't keep an eye on their equipment or they don't properly make sure that it's safe. I never leave anything in my car in Detroit that I would not be sad if it was stolen. So that means that I carry all of my photo equipment on me at all times. I don't leave anything in the car that is of any value to me. I've heard stories over the years of photographers leaving camera equipment in cars and them getting broken into. Don't be one of those people. So I would say don't leave anything of great value in your car. Anything can happen anywhere. So don't let that be you. So.
Yeah, because these tips would apply for Chicago as well.
Exactly. So, yeah. Any city. And, you know, being a woman, you learn to always keep your eyes peeled. I'm always looking around my environment. I'm always seeing who's in my environment, what's happening in my environment. It's just common sense to keep yourself safe. So whether I was in Detroit or in a rural city, I would still be doing the same thing.
Okay. So other tips as far as like you're walking the streets and you've got your expensive gear.
What do I do, right? Okay. Well, so when I go shooting, so this is what I do. I always shoot on a tripod. I know some people feel stifled by a tripod. And I think that there are definitely times for not using a tripod. If you are just taking casual, fun images, if you're someone who is not a professional photographer, who is not selling your images, maybe it's not as important that you get like perfectly sharp images. But for someone like myself, who and scenes that are being sold to people, I have to make sure it's my best interest to make sure that I get the sharpest image that I can. So I shoot probably 95% on a tripod. So I would say if you're just taking fun vacation photos, feel free, handhold, have at it. But if you are taking images for a client, you're taking images for fine art that you're going to sell, definitely use a tripod. When you are shooting architecture, I shoot a full frame. I currently have a Sony A7 III, which I just changed to last year, you know, riding that wave of photographers changing to mirrorless. It took me years to do it, but I finally did.
Doing it at the right time too, because these Sony cameras, and I'm sure the new Nikon and Canons are just amazing. Yeah.
Exactly. And I have friends that have bought both of the Nikon and Canon mirrorless, and they seem to be happy. Mm-hmm. So that's great. So I shoot with a wide angle lens. 16 to 35 is a workhorse for me. But my 24 to 105, I've been actually finding myself using that more as well than I used to in the past. And it just allows me a little bit more reach or range to get details that may be a little further away from me. I always shoot an aperture priority, and that's just because it makes things easy for myself. I'm on a tripod, so I don't have to worry about the shutter speed as much. And ISO 100 most of the time, if it's during the day. At night, sometimes that may change, but I try to keep it as low as I possibly can. I'm really impressed with the new mirrorless cameras. At least my Sony A7 III does a great job of, even at high ISOs, of very low noise. I shot it, I think 25.9 ISO one time just to try it, and I was like, I can't believe that my camera is getting this. Like my Canon 6D would never have been able to get that quality of image. So I think in the future, you know, we're getting better and better technology. It's just exponentially getting better. I bracket all the time. Not everybody brackets. You don't always need to bracket in every single scene. But I think when you're shooting at night, and this is something I'll talk about during my presentation at Out of Chicago, we'll talk about bracketing. I think it's very important when you're wanting to get the proper exposure for the cityscape, but also proper exposure for any of the lights that are in the scene. So whether they're street lights or lamps or car trails or even the sun as it's setting, I think to really get the proper exposure, bracketing is just something you have to do. Otherwise, you find yourself be very frustrated.
You'll typically combine those together in post-processing, or that's just the way of, okay, I've guaranteed that I've got the right exposure, and you just use one of them when you're going to process it?
You know, it depends. Sometimes I find, I have to sort of give props to the Sony, Sony camera, is that sometimes I find that on an underexposed image, sometimes I can just bring my shadows up or the exposure up, and I'm getting the detail that I need. Sometimes I don't need to blend them together. But when I do need to blend, I've used Jimmy McIntyre's luminosity masking system, his Raya Pro 2. And for anyone who is interested in learning that, he does an excellent job.
He taught at our thing a couple of years ago. We love Jimmy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love him. Yeah. He's done beautiful work. So that was he inspired me to learn the luminosity mask. I stayed away from them because they were really, I was a little overwhelmed by the thought of them. But as I watched his training videos, I was like, yes, I can do this. And he makes it really easy with the Photoshop
his panels.
The panels. Thank you. I was going to say plug-in, but that's the wrong word. yeah, for the panels. He makes it really easy.
Yeah. And also this year at Out of Chicago, we're going to have Greg Benz, who does his own Lumensia, Luminosity Mask panels. Okay. So,
I'm always open to learning something new. So I will check his out.
They're both great.
Yeah, I will definitely check his out too. Thanks for the tip there.
Yeah, that was more for the listeners, but yeah, I mean, yeah, we could just pretend it's me and you. I like that.
I think as photographers, we have to keep learning. Like, none of us know everything. We've all learned everything from other people. And so
Goodness. I am going to just pretend like it's just me and you here, and this is not a recording and an interview. And I am going to call you out on something, and it's not going to be very nice. Are you ready?
Okay,
I do this sometimes.
Yes.
You say on your website, I was reading about you, it's really good stuff too. And there's a couple things I really liked, but you said that you are a self-taught photographer.
Right?
But you also said earlier in the interview that you've watched, you know, hundreds of hours of videos and read hundreds of books.
Okay. So I guess when I consider self-taught as someone who didn't go to college and get a degree in photography. I guess self-taught is someone who I had to go out of my way, right? I had to choose to watch the videos. I had to seek them out. I had to seek out the books. I had to seek out other photographers who knew more than I did. So I guess maybe it should be more like a self-paced taught. Like, you know, like if you think like when you get these trainings online, like they're self-paced. Yeah. So it's kind of up to me to learn it, right?
I just really wanted to. That wasn't very nice.
No, but it's true, right? I took the one class that I took in a college setting was my very first class that I took. Everything else has been either classes online or, you know, in person.
It's really the best way to learn, and it's amazing what you can do. And to get this combination of learning online, but then getting together like in one of your workshops or at the conference, it's really the best way to do it, but to learn at your own pace. And and really it's like on demand teaching, on demand learning.
Yes,
it's like, it's like there's no reason, like with luminosity masks, I hear people going, oh, I got to learn luminosity masks, but they don't know why. They're just like, it's the cool buzzword. But you were kind of like, I don't need them. And then you got to a point where you're like, okay, I see what it can do for me. Yes, I am going to now delve into this, because you got to the point where it was a tool that you needed, and then you learned it when you needed it.
So I used what's to some people can be thought of as a dirty word, HDR, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I learned. That's how I learned bracketing, and I use HDR for many years. But like a lot of other people, got frustrated with some of its, some of its downfalls. So once I started seeing the blending with the luminosity mask and the beautiful light, and it looks so natural. And I liked how you could use, you know, your raw files to blend them together. So it just sort of sold me in that way. But I would say, and I want to touch again on what you were just mentioning about the self-paced learning. And I think that, you know, that's great. We don't always have time to go to a workshop, but I still think we need to go to the workshops. I think there's nothing better than be able to stand next to someone who knows what you want to know and be able to pick their brain and ask questions, because that's one thing you can't do on the internet. You know, like if you're watching videos, I'm like, I can't ask this person a question. They can't help me with this. How do I get this setting? I'm not getting this result. How do I get what I want?
Right. So, and to take that one step further, like you're saying, you could listen to Jimmy McIntyre's wonderful accent, but you can't ask him questions.
I love those accents.
But even better than that, in the, you know, in-person setting, you can try it and you could shoot, you can then process it, and you have the person right there going, oh yeah, that looks really good, but you really should have done this a little bit different or whatever, which is that immediate feedback that you can get in that in-person setting. Yeah.
Exactly. So that was, there's a workshop that I've taught in the past, which I just say, you know, my post-processing workflow. So I show people from the time I take my images and import them to Lightroom to my final image and saving my final image. And I show them all the tools that I use. I show them all the different software programs I use. And then I have them bring in their own images, and I'll process their images for them in front of them. So they can ask questions, and they can see the tools I'm using. They can see it in real time. So I think that's really helpful. I think that, you know, I can show my own images as well, but I think when you're sitting at home with your own images and you're trying to figure out, well, what can I do with this image? I have no idea. To have someone else that can say, okay, these are some of the things that I see, and this is what I would do if this was my image. So I think that those things can be very helpful, which I will be doing actually tomorrow night with my students at Schoolcraft. I'm teaching an urban night photography class right now, and I will, tomorrow night is our post-processing class time. So I'll be doing that with them.
Very cool. So you teach there. You also do your own workshops. Like, you lead workshops where you're shooting in Detroit. I know you have one coming up besides the Out of Chicago conference, where you'll be in Chicago, and also about post-processing. And we're going to talk about your art fairs. You said you teach a workshop on that too. But like, where can people go to find information on the workshops that you offer?
There's through Creative Vision Photography Workshops is the company that I go through for all of my local Detroit workshops and events. So I do teaching, but I also offer a lot of photography opportunities. So I set up tours where we get access to certain buildings. Some of them have been abandoned in the past, some of our beautiful buildings, like our theaters, like I like to do the tours in the theaters. Like, our theaters are beautiful. And of course, Chicago's got beautiful theaters too. So I think that's something we'll hopefully be doing.
We will be, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, thanks for helping us out with that. Yes, but yes, we're going to be going to the Chicago Theater. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll be very excited to see that again. Oh, so beautiful. So yeah, I think theaters, like, if I was going to choose like my favorite types of buildings to shoot, if I had to choose one, it would be theaters. Theaters are the old theaters, like the old architectural theaters. You know, I know that there's certain photographers out there that all they do is shoot like the abandoned theaters, and they're so beautiful. And I don't love just the abandoned, but just any theater. And so we're very fortunate to have some beautiful theaters. The Fox Theater, the Fillmore Theater, the Detroit Opera House are three of my favorites in the city. There's the Fisher Theater, but they don't allow us to do tours in there. So.
I know. Maybe someday.
Bummer. Maybe yeah. Someday.
Yeah. So what are you going to be teaching at, I think you've kind of already hit on what you like to shoot and what you do, but what's your class at the Out of Chicago conference?
So it's going to be very similar to, I guess, in my urban night photography class that I'm teaching right now. So we're going to obviously be going out and actually taking the photos. But before we do that, we're going to be talking about some general camera settings that we want to be using to capture the images. I will touch on bracketing, even though I know not everybody may understand bracketing or may even want to bracket, but at least help them to get the best exposed image that they can without getting what we call the blown out lights or highlights in the image. And of course, you know, composition, teaching people to look around and, you know, just showing them some of my favorite vantage points during our photo walks and like shots that I've taken in the past. And of course, that's not to say they're limited to that. I always encourage people to go beyond, you know, it's like, you know, not only looking where your tripod is or even like just putting your camera up to your face and taking a picture. I mean, there's so many other vantage points that we don't really think of, but encouraging people to really look around them and looking up and looking down, getting down low. You know, if you have to get on your knees or whatever to take a shot, you know, that's what we want to do. We do what we have to do to get the shot.
That's right.
That's my mantra. You know, it's, I go to crazy places. I've done some crazy stuff, I guess, in some people's eyes, but you know, but that's where you go. It's what you do to get what you want. So,
Yeah, no, that's great.
So we'll definitely be focusing on that. And I'll talk about some of my post-processing as well. I'll talk about the software that I use and my favorite tools that I use that I think are integral to, to getting the results that they want. I think that, you know, capturing the image in your camera to me is just like the first step in the creativity of getting the final image that you want. There's so much we can do with these software programs that we use.
Yeah, and give us a couple of the basic tips that you use for your night photos in the city. Because I've had times where someone's like, wow, I can't take as good of pictures as you, Chris, and they send it to me. And I'm like, actually, your picture's fine. You just need to do this, this, and this. And then they're like, oh my God, I am amazing. So
right,
yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, once you know the tools and you know what you can do with them and how to use them, then yes. Then I remember learning some of these tools and just seeing my photography just like, just exponentially go up, you know, the results that I was getting. You know, I've had people tell me like, your images, they just like, you know, they're so vibrant and the, you know, the details, and they're like HD, they like reach out to you. And so that's what I try to help people to do. So, in Lightroom, and without even getting into Photoshop, you know, not everyone knows Photoshop or wants to know Photoshop, but I think
the most important things are kind of in Lightroom when you first bring in that raw image. Yeah.
I do all of my basic editing in Lightroom. Mm-hmm. I know some people use Photoshop exclusively. It has the same engine as the camera raw engine as Lightroom and Photoshop share the same one, but you can do all the same things in Lightroom as you can do in Photoshop when it comes to that. I mean, I'm always playing with vibrance. Of course, exposure, playing with shadows and highlights. Shadows and highlights, I'm using those sliders. Those are like some of my main sliders that I'm using. Bringing down highlights, bringing up shadows constantly. I would say a clarity. I love the clarity slider. I just saw there's now the clarity and a texture slider. So I haven't actually really read to see exactly what that new texture slider is doing, but it's cool to see it there. I played around with it a little bit. It looks like it makes the edges a little bit more kind of a grungy look as, you know, the further you take it to the right. I love the clarity slider, what it does. I think that is like a magic slider and the things that you can do with it.
What tips do you give people as far as the white balance when you're shooting, processing for night photography?
You know, with night photography, you're dealing with so many different types of light. So you might have fluorescent and tungsten and natural light. You've got all this light in one scene. So I would say if you're shooting raw, I think shooting auto is perfectly fine. That's what I do for the most part. If you want to make adjustments, you can do that. I might use my Kelvin to make a slightly warmer or slightly cooler. But you can cycle through all of your different, like there's like auto modes that you can choose depending what camera you have. I'm not sure what they're all called.
But it'll be like cloudy and daylight.
Night. I think there even is a maybe night auto. so there's ones that, so cloudy might give you a little bit more of a, I don't know, is it a little cooler? I don't really use those very often, to be honest. I'll either use the Kelvin just to like bump it in one direction or the other. But knowing that you can make all of those adjustments at home in Lightroom or Photoshop or whatever software you're using.
Right. So it'll look different on the back of your camera if you have it in a different white balance. But when you get it home and you have the raw image, it's just, you got the pure raw image. You can put whatever white balance you want to it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's maybe more to just maybe help you envision, you know, when you're doing those on the back of your camera, you know, choosing different white balances, maybe more for your vision. But yeah, like you said, when you get home, the raw files is going to be, it's only if you're choosing to shoot JPEG that becomes more of an issue.
Yeah. Which to me, for the type of photography you're doing, sounds like that would be a really bad decision to shoot in JPEG.
I never use JPEG. I know for certain types of photography, events or people photography, there's certain reasons they need to use it.
Yeah. Maybe the Detroit Grand Prix and you were going to take 60,000 photos in one weekend. You should shoot
JPEG. You've got to hand them off to someone to edit right away.
Huh? Right. Right. And you need 15 of them every second. Yeah. Then you shoot JPEG. But
when you're
what we're talking about,
who's like, you know, on a tripod and I'm, you know, not moving super fast, you know, I can take my time and I don't necessarily have to worry ever to use a JPEG. So I'm raw all day, all the time.
So I know you said you haven't been doing as many interiors, the abandoned interiors as you used to, but let's talk a little bit. Just give us a couple of your favorite places to go. And you know, one of my favorite things I read on your site about you is how you said that, you know, when you were a kid or growing up or whatever, you wanted to be an archaeologist. I love that. And you're like, so I get to fulfill that through the abandoned places. That's so cool. F8, the Photographer's Perspective is brought to you by Out of Chicago. Out of Chicago brings together passionate enthusiasts with world-class photographers all in one epic location where you learn and shoot side-by-side with the pros. Since 2014, we've organized hands-on photography conferences in Chicago, New York City, Moab, and more. We are all photographers ourselves, so we understand what it takes to be inspired, get to the right place at the right time, and live our best creative life. So what are a few of your favorite places to go? Doesn't need to be Detroit, because I know, like you said, a lot of those are not there or can't get into. So yeah, give us a couple.
Sure. Okay. I've always been sort of sworn to secrecy when it comes to locations. So I unfortunately cannot give specific buildings outside of Detroit. That's just, I go into it knowing that, so that's fine. But I have psych hospitals, our favorites. And you think, psych hospital, what's so great about a psych hospital? It's going to be beige and sad looking. And it's like, but no, actually psych hospitals are very colorful and they have beautiful architectural details. Like when they built these psych hospitals back in the 1800s, they were built like with the same kind of detail that you would build a theater or a beautiful downtown building. Like these things were amazingly beautiful buildings. Like if you look up Kirkbrides, you'll see what I'm talking about. You'll see the beautiful architecture of some of these buildings. A lot of them have been torn down over the years, but some still exist. But yeah, even though it might not have been the most cheery of places when it came, it helped people convalesce. But I've seen some very interesting things, bathtubs and dental chairs. And I mean, they were really like their own towns, their own little cities. They had everything. They had bowling alleys, tennis courts. Of course, they had their own morgues. Dun, dun, dun. So yes, one of my friends that I would go shooting with, he had a fascination with everything morgue. So I've been to many morgues and funeral homes, more than I probably would have ever wanted to be at. But yeah, the old ones are very interesting. But theaters, of course, churches still have a lot of beautiful architectural details left in them. Masonic temples and YMCAs are also really neat too. Those are some favorites to see. I always like to, get into those types of buildings. Schools have never been as big of an interest for me, but I do like the old architectural schools. Like here in Detroit, Cooley High School is one that I photographed that I consider to be, one of our most beautiful schools that we've had in the city.
I didn't even know that, but I know that my dad went to school there. Crazy. Okay.
He did?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Don't know what year he graduated, but yeah, crazy, huh?
Oh, it was a beautiful, it's beautiful. Like the library is like, the woodwork in the library is amazing. I can send you some pictures. Just
yeah.
So you have an idea. The auditorium, unfortunately, last year had burned, but I took pictures a few months before it had burned. So I can show you. You can see a little bit of your dad's
house. Wow, I'll share them with them. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd
love to see that. Yeah. Okay, so let's go from one thing where you have to really toe the line of legalities to the other one. Now, and now you're trying to get in trouble with drone photography. So
yes.
Tell us how and why you got into that and what you've been able to do with it.
Yeah, so drone photography, I started to see other people's photos and video. Now, I never considered doing video in the past with, being static on the ground. But once I started seeing the video that people get flying over cities, I was just amazed and I was hooked and I was like, I want to learn this. I know that there's a huge learning curve with video, not only capturing it, but editing it. So it's on my list of things to do and learn. But at least for now, I can still take pictures. I have a Mavic 2 Pro. I had the original Mavic, which I went out and bought the Mavic 2 as soon as I heard it had a 20 megapixel sensor.
Right.
Yes, I need to get that. So I sold that one and then I bought this one and I've been very happy with it. I know I sent you that one image of the panorama. I love panoramas. That's another thing that I love to capture. And with the drone, it's so dramatic. The scenes that you can get, and it's unlike anything that anyone else has seen. Like that one image I was telling you that I sent you, I have it as sort of my, one of my main images. Like it's a 24 by 60 in my art fair booth. And every summer I have like one like main like draw in image, and that's the one I'm using this year. And I've already sold two of it already this summer. So, and I've only done 4 art fairs so far. So that just goes to show, I think people really respond to, you know, being able to see some of these scenes from the drone, and they're just so unique and different than anything that anyone else has seen before.
Right. Seeing it from a vantage point that you don't normally see yourself makes a really striking picture. Yeah.
And you know, the thing too about it is that it's not only about getting up hundreds of feet in the air. Like for me, sometimes it's just getting up 10 to 20 feet to get some architectural details, be able to get up close without the keystoning of like having to, you know, tilt my camera to get the image. I can fly my drone up and just shoot straight on, and I can get the shot that I want. There are some ghost signs or like old advertisements I've been able to get up close to get pictures. There's a Kresge ghost sign that I've been wanting to get close to, which is up maybe 8-10 stories. You can see it from the street, but you could never get like a straight on shot of it. And now I've got my drone shot of it, which is
awesome. That's so cool.
So it's things like that, just being able to get like up close details. But then, you know, also getting scenes that no one else has shot before. And I know there's a lot of people out there shooting drones now in Detroit, and it's great to see. And I have a laundry list of drone shots to get. And the only downfall of shooting with a drone is that weather and wind, and making sure you have permission to shoot in certain areas. So there's a little bit more of things you have to be aware of when you're going out and shooting with a drone. So I did go out and get my FAA Part 107 license. So now I can officially take images and sell them. I can be hired by a client to shoot for them, which I actually will be doing that for the Riverfront Conservancy. They'll be hiring me to do some shots of the riverfront for their marketing and advertising. So I just think it's just going to keep getting, drones are just keep getting bigger and bigger. I just saw it getting bigger out there. I'm like, this is something I need to jump on. And especially for someone like myself that shoots cities, I'm like, I need to do this. This is something I need to learn. I won't lie, it was very frightening at first, because you're flying this expensive piece of machinery around, you know, and you don't know what may happen. A gust of wind can come, or if you fly too close to something, I mean, you have to be very, very careful and really know what you're doing. So I did a lot of practicing of just going to open fields near my house and just getting the feel of my joysticks and how to operate it.
I think it's something that not enough people do, whether it's drones or just their camera, is they don't practice. They come to our workshops and they show up and they're like, I don't know how my tripod works. I'm not sure like what settings, you know, sometimes I just set up in my office here and I just, not with the drone, but with the camera, just practicing different things and trying this and what does this button do? And people need to do more of that. And that's especially true with the drones. Like, yeah, I did the same thing. Like went to the local park and just flew all around and tried every mode and tried all the different.
Oh, so you have one too.
Yeah. I have the, I wish I have the one you had. It wasn't out then. I have the Mavic Air. So because because I was going to Iceland and I wanted to pack it, and it's really, really tiny. So yeah, it was kind of amazing. Yeah. So, same thing. So I wanted to practice first before.
You're not going to go to Iceland not knowing how to operate your drone. I mean, this is a once in a lifetime type of opportunity. It's like, you have to know it. Yeah. Like you wouldn't take your camera to Africa and like a once in a lifetime shot and just like not know how to work it.
Right. Show me when I get there. No. Yeah. You got to practice.
No, that does not work. That does not work. But it's definitely like with anything, you know, there's a learning curve. And, you know, so it's not as easy for me just grabbing my camera and running downtown and taking pictures. Like, I have to always look at conditions and what I'm getting myself into and light, you know, the time of day. And it's a lot of more things I have to take into account. But it's so worth it. So worth it. Yeah, I think anyone who's looking to get into it, you know, definitely start looking into it and, you know, look at the different drone options. DJI has many different types of drones that, you know, more beginners to professional drones. And I've only had the DJI drones, so I don't know any other types. But I've been very happy with the pictures that I get from my drone. So,
yeah, yeah. No, I need to get one with a better camera. I wish.
You will, I'm sure, one day.
One of these days. So how long have you been a full-time photographer?
I quit my full-time job in 2011.
Okay. Oh, so, that's when we started out of Chicago. Interesting.
Yeah.
Crazy. So
it did feel a little crazy. I'm like, what am I doing? But when I was, I'm so happy I did it. It's been a great experience and a life-changing experience for me. And just being fortunate enough to do what I love and being able to make a living at it. And, you know, and doing the art fairs, right?
Well,
and
that's the lead-in. Is that a big chunk of being able to be a full-time professional is that in the summers you're doing art fairs basically every weekend, like you said in the beginning. We were really lucky that that we were able to get you to come teach it out of Chicago because you didn't happen to have one that weekend. So so tell us a little bit about this for people that might be interested. They're like, well, I take great photos and I've made great prints. It's like, well, it's an easy step that I could just be selling all my photos. Right. Yes.
Right. Well, not necessarily. Just saying, I'm going to do this and doing it.
For sure.
There definitely is, you know, a few things you may want to learn before you make that decision. And as I had mentioned to you earlier, I do a workshop for local photographers called Selling Your Photos at Art Fairs and Artist Markets. And it's meant to be a more beginning, like introductory. It's only a 2-hour workshop, but I pack so much information into it. I mean, I talk about, you know, the different fairs that are in Detroit, the different holiday markets and artist markets that people can sell their work. I talk about all the different vendors that I use and the materials that I use for everything, my tent and my carpeted walls. And I talk about selling your work there and like how all that works and just getting ready. And, you know, just things that you need to purchase. And I have an art fair checklist that I give out to them as well. And I share my whole, my workshop document that I share is the links to everything in it. So it's really meant to be kind of like a crash course into art fairs and just really, you know, at least for someone to get a sense of, is this for me? I encourage people, like, instead of maybe running out and getting an art fair tent and doing some of these art fairs, maybe try doing an either an artist market, which these markets are year-round and they're indoors, or doing like a holiday fair. They're usually one day and you just need a table, maybe a table and some bins and sell some prints. Those are a great way to kind of dip your toe in without making the major financial investment of doing an art fair. So there's a lot.
It takes quite a bit of upfront costs. I mean, a few thousand dollars, right? I mean, you're going to have to make prints. You're going to have, like you said, the tent to get into all of that. There's quite a bit to it. It's not just, let's go next weekend and try this.
Well, I was fortunate. There's a local artist market that I was at for 2 years that I was able to sell my work, get feedback on my Detroit images to see which ones are popular, which ones are not popular. So I had a sense before I even started doing art fairs, like which images were good sellers. And of course, I'm always taking new pictures. So I'm always mixing new things in. But I think that was very helpful for me to get a sense of, you know, am I even going to be successful doing this? And, you know, it wasn't something that I did lightly, but I was like, you know, I did start off with another photographer. So the two of us did a tent. So I think sharing one is also a good idea. Kind of cuts down on costs. You have another person that can help you work the fair. So it may, and you know, someone to set up and tear down. So it's a lot of work. I tell everyone that takes my workshop, it's a lot of work.
But there's a huge commitment every weekend too, right?
But well, you know, I look at it like this is what I do. This you do your job 5 days a week, right, to make your salary. So I look at it like, well, time to go to work. It's May now. It's time for me to go do my art shows. So that's what I do from May to September. I do have, you know, there's weekends I have off that I don't have a fair, but I do usually like 14 shows every summer.
Wow.
And yeah, that's good for me. You know, I'm always looking for new shows though. If there's something that looks interesting, I bought my new, my own trailer for the first time this year. So, excuse me. So now I'm sort of, trying some shows in Ohio, this summer. So I'm sort of venturing away from Detroit and trying out some other locations. So I'm been having fun kind of doing that. So it's, like I said, it's rewarding, because I'm selling my work and I'm, you know, I get to talk to a lot of different people. I get to hear a lot of people's stories because I'm selling Detroit photography. I get all the family history. I hear all the different stories of people that used to work in these buildings, or they used to have family members that work in these buildings, and they share so many stories. I get so much history. I get to learn about Detroit, by talking to people. It also helps me with my business because I meet business owners, I meet architects, I meet interior designers, I meet people who see my work and they're like, we want to work with you. We want, you know, we've got clients that we know want to, you know, would love your work. And so it's a great marketing tool from that perspective as well. But it can be financially rewarding as well. So, you know, it's how most of the money I make is through my art fairs.
That's great. Something you love, something you love doing and making a living from it. So it's, I believe that's technically called living the dream. Good job, Alana.
Well, you know, anyone who's an entrepreneur, like you, any photographer will probably say that they do a variety of things. Like nobody does one thing typically. You know, I do the workshops and events, and I do, you know, I've got client work. I've got people that hire me to go and take pictures. And then of course I've got the art fairs. So, you know, it all sort of gets cobbled together, you know, to make one big pot of money so I can pay my bills.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So if people want to come see all these photos we've been talking about, where can people find you online?
If you go to DetroitCityPhotos.com and you will see my art fair schedule is on my website. You can see my galleries. You can see information about workshops. A little bit of information about me, and how to contact
you. Could just Google Alana St. Laurent also.
You can do that too. Yep. You can Google me and you'll get my website as well.
Exactly. All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much for doing this.
I am very happy to do it. Thanks for asking me.
We can't wait to hang out in Chicago in not too long, just a few weeks. So,
you and I have never met in person.
I know, we were saying that the other day. Like we've done like probably like 4 different video conferences. I've talked to you on the phone a couple of times. We've emailed back and forth. And no, we've never met in person. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I know that you were here in Detroit giving a talk to one of the photography groups and I wasn't able to make it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Scott Shields said you were going to come and you didn't. Exactly. I remember that.
Uh-huh. I know. I wasn't able to make it, but I know for sure, 100%, I will see you out of Chicago.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. You better show up.
I'm showing up. I will be there. Don't worry.
All right. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Bye. F8, The Photographer's Perspective is hosted by me, Chris Smith, and produced by Out of Chicago. A special thanks to all photographers that share their inside knowledge to make this possible. We release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are found. To learn more about Out of Chicago and upcoming events, go to outofchicago.com. Subscribe to our mailing list to stay connected and be the first to know of our next new location where you can shoot side-by-side with the pros.